Now, says Jehovah, the one who shaped me, that was yesterday's, excuse me. Yes, he is saying, it is not for nothing that you have been my representative in strengthening the tribes of Jacob and in bringing home again those of Israel who are held in captivity. Now I have also given you as a luminary for the nations to represent my saving grace to the most distant part of the earth. That was a fairly long verse. It's verse 6, Isaiah 49, verse 6, in the Word Green version of 2003. From the Holy Word of God, our daily scripture for today, little children. So we see a lot of import in that particular scripture. It says, you know, it's not for nothing that you've been my representative. Now I've also given you as a luminary to represent my saving grace throughout the earth. I mean, it's a profound statement. It's a very significant statement to God's representatives. In this case, it sounds like there's only one representative to whom he's speaking there. Wow. So it's very important for those who are called and who are chosen by being called. In other words, when they read that scripture, they feel like they're the one who's being talked about, that they are the one whose purpose it is to represent this saving grace of God, Jehovah, to the most distant part of the earth. They feel that calling. And that's how they know that they're called. They feel it when they read that. I mean, not everybody feels the same way about anything. And the way people feel about the scriptures can also change over time. All of a sudden, someone can get the calling, and they can know that this is their purpose. All of a sudden, it can change from what it was before. Perhaps at one time in our lives, we're too busy to think about scriptures. And at another time, maybe we realize this is our purpose, is to fulfill the scriptures. In the Ark of Urartu, the Orient Express, the article that we've been studying, we're at the very last paragraph of chapter 4. Chapter 4, paragraph 12. Well, look, we even have a map here, a beautiful satellite image map or drawing. I didn't even notice this when I was preparing the study, but let's shrink it down a bit. There's a place of first descent. There's the wall of heaven. And which is north? I guess north is usually towards the top of the page, obviously, right? That's normally north on these satellite maps. So that's where it looks like. So it looks like the wall of heaven was there, and the ark landed just north of the wall of heaven on the map. And then the wall of heaven runs from, it also looks like it runs from southwest towards the northeast, as seen here on the satellite image. And the path of the mud flow, it was flowing north in a meandering path down the slope to where Noah's Ark Visitor Center now is located, and where the Ark itself is located also. It's the National Park Visitor's Center for Noah's Ark that's located there, and Noah's Ark has been declared a national treasure by the Turkish government. Of course, it is an immense treasure. It's an international treasure, in fact, but since it's in Turkey, they've declared it a national treasure. And the place of first descent, shown and indicated by David Deal, is shown as a... This is interesting. They've shown the place of first descent is this place here, shown as a ship-like shape, interestingly. So maybe there's still a remnant of the shape of a ship in that location, it looks like, from this satellite image. But then this, I imagine, here to the northwest of that is probably the city of Nakhchivan. Or maybe all around that area, the city of Nakhchivan and the first city built. Now the oldest city, this would be an older city than the city we're going to talk about in the paragraph that we're studying today. This would be older, but the city of Eridu is the place where they may have built the Tower of Babel. We talked about that as possibly having been, if it were synchronized with, what were we synchronizing it with? 2778, 4 years earlier, the rise of Sothis, I think. Yeah. So for the rise of Sothis to be synchronized with the first day of the Egyptian calendar, it would have begun in 2778 at Eridu, but at Memphis this was the year 2774 when that same synchronization occurred, and that was the time of the eclipse, that occurred at Noah's Ark. I want to call it a website. It's not a website. It's the Ark site. It's an archaeological site, Noah's Ark. Not the same as a website at all, but the eclipse that occurred in 2774, it occurred at the site of Noah's Ark. So that would be 4 years after the beginning of the Egyptian calendar, if that occurred on the rising of Sothis at Eridu. Eridu being somewhat north of Memphis, and that's why the rising of Sothis occurs 4 years earlier at that site than it does in Memphis. These are all things that are, you know, calculated by astronomers and by me too, because I do have a background in physics, and that includes astronomy. If I want to study astronomy, I can do that. I've studied a lot of different areas of physics. Now, Jesus said that he came to start fire on earth in Luke 12:49. Well, Nimrod is said to have been founder of fire worship. According to Wikipedia article N. Merkar, the grandfather of Gilgamesh, a man called Evagrius, has long been identified with Nimrod and identified as En-Merkar. Nimrod founded Erech, also known as Uruk, from Genesis 10 and 10, now called Warka, 40 miles northwest of Ur. Compare Ur, Genesis 11:31, the city of Abraham. Erech is the home of Gilgamesh by the first dynasty of Uruk. En-Merkar, identified by David Roll as Nimrod, was given by a king list as builder of Unug, or Uruk. That's from one of my notebooks, page 96. Mr. Jackson, on page 267 of Chronological Antiquities, volume 1, footnote 61. That book is from 1752, the year of our common era, gives a rule to Belus of 62 years by some, quote, old Latin chronicle in Scaliger's edition of the Chronicon of Eusebius, end quote. On page 74, he says, and on his own page 263 accounts for Belus as contemporary of Haik, H-A-I-C, compare with H-A-Y-K, the Armenian patriarch, and Nimrod's dynasty as 190 years on his own page 235, as by Alexander Polyhistor, who drew upon Berossus. Sorry, it's itchy nose from... It's still allergy season, so I'm tempted. I shouldn't be touching my nose, but it's hard to resist. Okay, let's even open that book. Let's get that Chronological Antiquities book open here. See, I don't even know if I can do that. Hang on a second here. I know I can find it. In Faith, there it is, Volume 1. Okay, let's go there. And bring it down. We want, what page do we want again? Page 235, okay. I just want to prove to you that this is a real book, and I'm not imagining this book. Page 235, let's make this bigger so we can see it. That's page 207. That's too far. Probably it's page 308, 271. 240. We're getting there. We're getting close. Page 236. Page 235. There he is. Okay. So, on page 235, Alexander Polyhistor from Berossus reckoned this dynasty no more than 190 years. It says right there. That's what we just said. That's where we got it from. Okay, a comparison of the to the first Egyptian dynasty of Manetho from Syncellus in Fotheringham's book. Well, we've seen that book many times. Where is it? Here it is. A comparison from Syncellus. Well, Syncellus is where we get the dynasties from, for a lot of this information for the different dynasties. What dynasty again are we looking at? Let me think now. Let me jump to the... Oh, we're in the same... Oh, I've got the great smell of leather. I just smelled leather. Yeah. I just got some new leather tools, by the way, but I haven't used any of the tools yet, but this is the belt number 7 I built. I made my 7th leather belt recently. It's a black leather belt. And I've done it with the brass snaps. Brass snaps. So I can easily take it, change the buckles, open it up, change the buckles. So that's something I made a few days ago. Forgot to mention it. Kept meaning to mention it, but I didn't get around to mentioning it. So let's see, what were we looking at this for again? Oh yeah, right. Okay, so right here, Dynasty 1, 253 according to Africanus and 252 years for Dynasty 1 according to Eusebius. When I prepared that, that's what I remember reading. Yeah, it's page 218 of this book by Fotheringham. Maybe I should bring it closer to where we are, but here it is. Page 118. Right, this is where it is. Fotheringham's book, called The Chronology of the Old Testament. Let's go back again to the article. Here we go. So, because we had 190 years... from the book by Jackson, we add the 62 years if we want to get to 252 from 190, we'd add 62, right? Because we already mentioned that Jackson gave a rule to Belus of 62 years on page 267. We didn't look at that yet, but let's look at that, page 267, Jackson's book. See if that's actually... I hope it's correct. I haven't checked it recently. Where is it? Yeah, the old Latin Chronicle and Scaliger's edition. Scaliger's edition, he says, of the Chronicon of Eusebius, page 74, gives to Belus 62 years. It's in footnote 61 on page 267 here of Chronological Antiquity, 1752, John Jackson, Volume 1. So we've done all our homework there. And so 252 equals 190 plus 62. So they tally. So when the first dynasty began in Egypt in 2735 at the death of Nimrod, Narmer, what's this eclipse? This is the 2774 eclipse. Seen from what location? I'm not sure. Let's find out. Let's see. From Helwan, Egypt. It's a partial eclipse. In Egypt. Okay, yeah. Right. Well, that's interesting, yeah. That we have that. It was a total eclipse at the Ark site. That's right. But in Egypt, it wasn't a total eclipse. It was still a partial eclipse. That's important. So they would have seen it in Egypt. So otherwise, how would they have known that there was an eclipse, right? But knowing there'd been an eclipse, they could discover where the center of it was and find out it was at the Ark site. All of these things are important if we're trying to understand what the ancients were thinking, right? That we know that they were very interested in the heavens. We know that from some of the other discussion we've been talking about to do with the early Chinese astronomers, and specifically Kang Ji, and the one we call Kainan is identified as the same person. And he's the son of Arpakshad, who's actually what the great grandson of Noah. But the 252 years of that period from 2735 plus the 215 years of the Arabian kings mentioned as after Nimrod's dynasty, that's in Jackson's book too, I think, the 215 years. I think we can maybe find, let's find that out. See if we can come up with it if we just search for the number 215. Wow. Oh, he talks about Demetrius. That's really good. That's a great reference, which we've covered in previous or other articles like Green, the time of Demetrius. And in the article Joseph and later articles, we talk about the great, amazing records of Demetrius, the ancient historian who was a Jewish historian, who gives us the time of the Exodus in our chronology. Once we correct for the idea that there were extra years, because of the extra months, when you round off a month, or when you have a number of years given, which could have an additional number of months and not be an exact, it means we're given numbers of years in round numbers, so when we allow that each one of them has an average of 6 extra months, then we can add some extra years at the end and make up exactly what we think the true total is. And that's what we did using Demetrius as the starting point, and we ended up with it. That's how we got our chronology the way it is. Here's the Arabian kings mentioned here. Right. The kingdom of the Arabians. ended after 215 years, pages 235 and 236 here. Right. Right, that's what he gets. That's what he gives. Okay. So Jackson did give that number. 215. So let's do that. Just, I can do it in my head. As long as I'm awake like I am now, I can do that in my head. I've already done it, but let's verify that I did it right. 2735. In the article, did I do it right? If we subtract the 252 minus 215, is that what the two numbers were? 2268. Yeah, we get down to exactly the year of Sargon that we gave earlier in the article. We present not as dogma that number, but or that calculation, but rather as benefit to the understanding derived by existing coincident dates, such as may facilitate some coordination of national eras. Now, you see, the 2735 is very crucial because 2741 is the beginning of the dividing of the earth, according to our later articles. And Nimrod ruled for 6 years after that point, so that's why it's 2735, the death of Nimrod. And also, okay, we know if you add, look at what you get if you add 42 years to 2735. If Nimrod was building the Tower of Babel at Eridu, if you add 43 years actually, to 2735, you get 27 and 3 and 4 is 7, 5 and 3 is 8, so 2778, which is the same year that the Egyptian calendar would have begun had it been begun at Eridu, because of the actual synchronization of Thoth 1 with the rising of Sothis, which would have occurred in very close to that year in that city, Eridu, because it's north of Egypt by a small distance, enough to make the date when the rising of the star occurred 4 years earlier than the date we gave for the eclipse, which was 2774, right? So, yeah, so at some place in Egypt, the rising of Sothis was synchronized with the date of the eclipse that occurred at the Ark site. But at Eridu, it was 4 years earlier. But this actually aligns very well with the 43 years of the Tower of Babel, if it was begun to be built in 2778, and that would be 2 years after the death of Shem in our chronology. So in other words, once Shem died, and he was a faithful son of Noah, then the rebellion sort of flourished more vehemently, more strongly, right? And Nimrod was the rebel who led this building of the tower. But anyway, his reign didn't really occur until after the Tower of Babel ended, right? Which, and that was, well, if that was 2741, of course, you see. Yeah, you see that the whole thing is, they gradually left off building the tower. But his rule didn't start till they started dividing the earth, which we said was 2741. And the battle between Nimrod and Shelah, or Shinnong, could have occurred in 2737, which is the beginning of the reign of Shinnong, right? So there's time for that to have occurred prior to the death of Nimrod. All these things fit in very nicely, actually, which is surprising because it's such an ancient thing, very ancient. And how do we discover this if it's not with some kind of guidance from some divine eternal being who knows these things because he's existed forever? Now, writing began after the scattering of nations into groups. It would be after 2741, in other words. This offers a reason for the reign of Nimrod getting lost, as for the 62 years discussed in paragraph 312, the discrepancy in Sargon's date as accounted from Nimrod. Maybe we'll look at that some other day, because we're going to run out of time today. The date of the king of Uruk, Enmerkar, is estimated as of the 27th or 26th century of the Sumerian king list, on the Sumerian king list. And as of circa 2900 BCE by Kate Fielden's dating of the years of the height of the city of Eridu. They date it based on the years, the height of the city, like how many layers. The oldest city on Earth, that's the city of Eridu. But we, of course, we know the city of Nakhchivan, where the Ark landed, that would be an older city. But the oldest city on Earth, as far as these rebels go, right, the oldest city on Earth after the confusion of the languages would be the city called Eridu. You would think that's where it happened if they built the tower there. And the place chosen by David Roll for the Tower of Babel was Eridu. Fire worship is connected with to the worship of the sun god in ancient Egyptian religion. A god known as Ra or Re, from the day of Nimrod being associated with the name of Belus, which means Lord, as likens to a mighty ruler. We even saw the false god called Baal during the time of the Israelites living in the Promised Land, even in the time of Elijah with the test they had a contest between Jehovah and Baal with Elijah presiding over that. If you recall that story, you can look that up in the Bible. But anyway, that's the same god Baal and Belus. It comes from the same idea, Lord, as likens to a mighty ruler. The sun's light as it is a source of life, providing food by assisting plant growth, is manifestation of God's love. The eclipse of Nimrod illustrates that the ancients studied astronomy in Kainan's time, 3145 BCE to 2685 BCE, in our genealogy, and were very knowledgeable as they synchronized their months based on the coincident rising of Sirius at dawn. This, we're talking about the Egyptian calendar here, we're talking about, with an annular eclipse of the sun that occurred. That's what the Egyptian calendar is synchronized with. With the eclipse that's annular that occurred on July 18th, 2774 BCE. And it was at the Ark site this occurred, and at a lot of other places along the path of the eclipse, but it was north of Egypt. We saw that already. The heavenly bodies were thus recognized by them as worthy of rapt attention. That is, the ancients recognized the heavenly bodies as worthy of rapt attention, and their light was recognized as fire, the light of the heavenly bodies. People have proposed that human life span was shortened by the changes to the solar radiation that were a consequence of a global cataclysm, which is known as the deluge. We talked about that. That perhaps the human life was shortened because of this changes to the solar radiation that occurred after the global deluge. Love may manifest itself as discipline at times, Proverbs 3 and 12. The genealogy is still in an early stage of development at the time of this writing, so we don't seek to draw conclusions about any chronology. Right. Yeah, easy for us to say after we made all these discussions already. Our faith is Bible-based and our work is a preaching work. Only as Jehovah is willing may we focus on some particular avenue of research, and such focus is necessary because of the number of possibilities and our faith in a single one. We have to focus on something, is what that says. And that's why we try to come up with some chronology, right? We're trying to come up with some answers. Anything rather than nothing. So we're not really trying to draw conclusions, is what I'm saying. We're trying desperately to stay humble in the face of all these great, apparently great discoveries. How do you stay humble, right? There's that song that goes, Lord, it's hard to be humble, it goes, right? when you're perfect in every way, how do you be humble when you're perfect in every way? If, you know, so hopefully we're able to stay humble no matter what. But because the one whom Jehovah loves, he reproves, even as a father does a son in whom he finds pleasure. Proverbs 3:12 of the 1984 New World Translation. So that's it for today's study, little children. I hope that was enjoyable. It's certainly enlightening to me, even reading it now. It explains to me why the date 2135 meant so much, which wasn't clear earlier. But it really makes everything add up beautifully, perfectly well. So, I mean, how can it add up so perfectly from the ancient historians and then arrive at 2268, which is beautifully light-giving number, because we've seen 2268 is another useful number in other ways. We even use it to derive the number, the value of phi plus 1 when we took 2268 and factored it into 6.3 times 360, which equals 2268. And 6.3 divided by 2 pi, which is 6.28 something, right? 3.14159265358973223843823279502884197169399375100, just so I don't forget pi to 50 decimal places. 3.14159, so 3.14 times 2 is 6.28. 6.30 divided by 6.28 is slightly bigger than 1. That number put to the power of 360 gives us a number which is very close to 5 plus 1. And, you know, very close, you know, maybe 150 parts per million different or something. I forget the exact numbers, but it's very, it's even closer than that, though, to the number of 5 that was used in the Great Pyramid. It's only 15 parts per million different from, or 16 parts per million, whatever it was. From the, well, it just depends on what numbers you use for the number of phi in the Great Pyramid, because there are different numbers given for the dimensions of the Great Pyramid, slightly different. But that's it. I mean, we've seen this number 2268. It's a miracle number, and it's useful in our chronology from the time of Adam to the time of the first temple that was built by Solomon, and from that time, we've used it as well after that. But we have no more time today. Fortunately, I'm running out of time as I run out of thoughts. October 20th, 2024 it is, of the Common Era. The time is 16:30 hours, North American Eastern Daylight Time. And thank you for listening and watching. Thank you so much. I'm Ward Green, and I love you very much. In my behalf, this is Liv Dusty, this is Cassie, saying bye for now. That was the end of Chapter 4, Paragraph 12, of that chapter of the Ark of Urartu, the Orient Express. Bye for now.